Welcome back in to the David L. Gray Show, off code, unscripted on Saints Dominic's Media. Glad to have you here for an awesome show. We're going to be talking about Frank Pavone, some thoughts I have on him, some of the things he said about why we have to participate in the call to vote team in the United States. So we're going to talk about that. Also, Candace Owens. A lot of people are going in on Candace Owens, thinking that she's completely went off the reservation, that she's not mentally well, largely by her comments about the group of people who are in, we could call them the Jews, all right? I think that's what she would call them. And she seems to be having went completely E. Michael Jones. So I want to talk about that. I don't have a negative. I'm not going to jump on a bandwagon about these negative comments people are making about her, even including a lot of Catholics are saying that, hey, she's supposed to be Catholic now. She's supposed to, you know, she represents us. And now she's, we should throw her out of the tribe already, right? So I want to have some comments on that. And that is the David L. Gray Show, off code and scripted today. Appreciate you. Looking forward to your comments below. And let's get into this. I'm kind of excited about this topic. Also, to see what you think. Again, this is David L. Gray Show, off code, unscripted. Let's get into it now. You know, Frank Pavone's people reached out to me about a month ago about, you know, getting him on the David L. Gray Show. And so I've been going back and forth, you know, saying, you know, what does he want to talk about? You know, and so I just reached back out yesterday asking, hey, can he come on to talk about where Donald Trump is at now concerning in vitro fertilization? And so waiting for a response back. So hoping to get Frank Pavone on the show, hopefully this week, so we can flush this out, because I'm just completely disturbed. I've been completely disturbed for a long time by the Republican Party. Back when I used to vote Republican, and even when back in 2012 when I was working for the Mitt Romney campaign, I voted after I became Catholic. I became completely pro-life. I mean, completely pro-life from natural birth to the end of natural death. And I thought Republicans were the only people I could vote for because they were the only people that were for natural marriage, therefore, and they were against child sacrifice. So I'd always vote a Republican after I became a Catholic, because I'm a single issue voter. The life issue, which in for me that also includes marriage, because marriage includes procreation. But man, I always thought if gay marriage became legal, so-called gay marriage became legal, Republicans would, you know, they completely abandon that issue, and they would probably become pro gay marriage, right? And they have, right? So I'm gonna say, okay, I'll still vote for these guys, right? Because at least they're still trying to protect babies in a womb, right? But man, as soon as Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Bolton was struck down by the Supreme Court, these guys just completely became pro-abortion. They immediately began talking about, hey, when's a good time to kill a baby? Is it 6 weeks? Is it 12 weeks, right? There's no effort really to evangelize the world about, hey, these babies in the womb are created in the image and likeness of God. They have sacred value. They have sacred dignity. We need to protect this, right? No, that was never on the table. So, But this J.D. Vance and Trump ticket, you know, I made a video about this, about how pro-abortion it is. It's just completely disturbing how far they've gone. I mean, they're all in for the abortion pill. They're all in for in vitro fertilization. They're all in for abortion being a state issue. And even recently, Donald Trump was like, you know, he called, you know, he's going to vote against the Florida ballot initiative because he says, hey, you know, he thought that the 6 week thing was pretty extreme, that maybe it should be 12 weeks. I really don't know how many weeks he thinks is okay until a baby can be killed in a womb, but it's just completely disturbing. Now he's going in for marijuana. I guess that's also on the ballot, because that's what you find. Anytime you have abortion on the ballot, you tend to also have marijuana you know, legalization of marijuana. You kind of want to get those two things together. It's like a, it's like going to a fast food joint and ordering a combo meal, ordering a whole menu. Like you want to biggie size it. Hey, I have some abortion and a little bit of marijuana with that, right? It's really demonic. I don't know what's going on. But just completely disturbed by the Republicans, the whole MAGA movement. It's really sick to me. And a lot of people would say, hey, David, well, what about, you know, how can you call David, how can you call Donald Trump and Vance the most pro-life abortion, pro-abortion, abortion ticket that there's ever been? You know, what about, you know, to have the whataboutisms, like, what about Kamala? And you know, what they're doing. I think the difference between Republicans and Democrats is that Democrats tell us exactly who they are. They don't lie about it. They'll have Planned Parenthood outside of the their convention. Kamala Harris, she'll campaign at a Planned Parenthood site. Democrats tell you who they are. They don't lie about their affection for child sacrifice. Republicans, not so much. They want to play the game. They want to walk up the line. They want to pretend as if they're on our side, but they're really not, right? So that's the main difference. And also, David, Donald Trump, when he during his first term, he put some Supreme Court justices on the Supreme Court that eventually overturned Roe versus Wade. Well, I don't think that was a good idea. I mean, if you look at, like I said, I predicting about 10 years from now, 15 years from now, every state in the union is going to have legalized abortion. Every constitution is going to be amended. So only thing Roe versus Wade overturned, it, only thing that did was send it back to the states where that's going to now every constitution in a union is going to be amended. So I think we're going to end up in a worse place than we were, or maybe just equal. I think why? Because hearts haven't changed an issue. We can change the law, but if you don't change hearts, nothing really changes. We just have to re-evangelize this culture. I don't know if we can. Maybe it's too far gone, but we have to try. But this is not an issue to law. The problem in the United States is that life is a legal issue rather than a moral issue. We have to fix this system to really teach and evangelize people that life is a moral issue. It's not a legal issue. People call abortion a position. Positions can change. Child sacrifice is not a position. It's demonic. It's a fact. And so we just have to really teach people that about what's really going on here. And perhaps then we could change hearts. But until then, I think the law is always going to change. I mean, let's just take a look at what's going on here. In 11 states in this November federal election, abortion is going to be on the ballot in Arizona, Colorado, Florida, Maryland, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, New York City, no, state of New York, Nevada, and South Dakota. That's like 11 states where abortion is going to be in the ballot. I think it's already been on the ballot, maybe like 10 states already. So we're getting close to the halfway point where constitutions have been amended to allow for child sacrifice. And in all these states, all these measures are going to pass. All of them. From South Dakota to Nevada to New York, Nebraska. Oh, Nebraska too. So I guess that's 10. Okay. Now Montana, Missouri, Maryland, Florida, Colorado, Arizona, in all 10, they're all going to pass. So, I mean, maybe there's some hope for Florida, but the polling right now says that in Florida, people are going to vote for Trump and they're going to vote for weed and abortion. So I think Donald Trump is going to win, I think, by landslide, as long as there's no cheating. Hopefully, I think the margins may be too wide to really cheat. And I think that's really due in part because Kamala has only had maybe like 90 days to try to put something together and she's completely incompetent, right? So I think he's going to win, but abortion, child sacrifice is going to win the day as well. So it's going to be a mixed bag. But that's where we're at. So I don't think Roe versus Wade was some sort of win for anyone other than Planned Parenthood being able to enshrine child sacrifice in every state constitution. So I want to segue into this, into Frank Pavone and his thoughts on why you have to participate in a cult of voting. This is David O. Gray Show, Off Code, Unscripted, on St. Dominic's Media. So Frank Pavone, founder of Priest for Life, he's formerly Father Frank Pavone, who was laicized because of some campaign against him that reached the Vatican. And, you know, they said he's no longer a priest with faculties. Cannot present himself as a priest. And, you know, a lot of politics involved in that, but I always like Frank Pavone. And like I said, I think he should be coming on the show maybe this week or next week. So we'll see about that. We'll have a deeper conversation, a debate about this. But for now, I just want to play this video that he put out about why you must participate in a cult of voting, as if voting is some sort of sacrament that you have to do, this is your way to participate in a common good. All right. So let's get into this.
As pro-life leader Frank Pavone here of Priests for Life, often voters are faced with a situation where, for moral or other reasons, they don't like either of the candidates in a race. And naturally, the first thought is, well, I'll choose the better of the two. But then some feel like that's choosing evil. They don't want to choose the lesser of two evils because we're never supposed to choose evil. But brothers and sisters, if you choose the better of the two candidates, you are choosing to limit evil, and that's a good. Think of a runaway train going down the track. You can't stop the train. But what if you could shift the track? Now, at the end of both tracks, it's going to hit something, it's going to damage something. But if you know that less damage will be done at the end of one track than the other, can you switch the train to the track where it will do less damage? You're not choosing to do that damage. That's beyond your intention or your control. But you've chosen to lessen the damage, and that's a good. Brothers and sisters, voting is not canonization. Voting is not a marriage proposal or a declaration that you agree with a candidate on everything. It's a tool. It's a chess move in a long game in a world where we're trying to advance good amidst a lot of imperfection. Don't miss your opportunity to advance some good.
I like Father Frank Pavone. I really do. I really like him. I like his smile. I like everything about Father Frank Pavone. I really feel bad that he's not a priest with faculties anymore. So, but his little pitch there about why we have to participate in the cult of voting, it just has a lot of problems. First of all, as I said in a previous video on this topic, the first thing we have to deal with is the issue of the logical false dilemma. A logical false dilemma is when people give you just two options. It's either A or B. Those are your only two options. What if there's a third option? What if there's a fourth, there's a fifth, there's a sixth? Right? And I think that's what the Catholic Church actually teaches about the common good, and we'll get into that in a second. So, but the first issue is a false dilemma. People always act in a cult of voting that you have to vote. If you don't, they say if you don't vote, it's a vote, right? They always twist things. Like Father Frank Pavone does that in his video as well. He sort of plays with words in ways that you shouldn't use words. You know, he says that people say that if you vote for vote for a person who's going to do evil, that you're voting for evil. Then he twists around. He says, no, actually, it's not that. Voting for evil is not voting for evil. What you're doing is you're voting to mitigate evil. So But he never addresses the issue that you are voting for evil. That if you know a person is going to come in and they're going to do evil, you are voting for evil. He never addresses that. What he does, he twists words. He reframes it a different way. Right? He plays this word game. He says, no, you're not actually voting for evil. You're actually voting to mitigate more evil. And I know some of you, my friends, some of you hounds of heaven, you know, you are voting. I'm not trying to disparage you or ridicule you or anything like that. I do think some of you have told me why you're voting. I think some of those reasons, like I've told you, I think are reasons that are perhaps consistent with what the church teaches. For example, it all comes down to, this is morality. And so the church says that voting itself is neither good or bad, but all actions are either good or evil. Voting itself, just the act of voting, although is neutral, because voting is neutral act because it has to be coupled with the intention, like, why am I voting? Now, why you're voting does turn the neutral moral act of voting to be neither good or evil, right? That's how that works. So what's your intention of voting? Some of you told me that, well, your intention is because you want to stop communism. I think that's a negative intention. I really don't know how that works. But I do recognize the fact that I think that is an intention that makes the moral act of voting good, because the church does teach that communism is evil. People who are communists are automatically excommunicated a lot of sentient by ipso facto, just like Freemasonry, abortion. Some of these things just excommunicate you ipso facto. You don't need to go to the Vatican and get a court ruling or anything like that to get it publicly declared. But so, yeah. Because of that, because of the church's teaching on communism, if you have the intention to vote to stop communism, I think that's an intention that does turn the moral act of voting good. I can't go there with you with communism, because if we were to turn it into a positive sense, what are you saying? Well, you're voting to keep the Democratic Republic in place. That's what you're saying. And you'll say that, while asking the question, well, is this Democratic Republic, is it evil itself? I think there's a lot of problems from the founding of this country, from the Constitution on, that does incline our country to put it on a trajectory towards secularism and atheism eventually. I think that's the trajectory that our Constitution puts us on. So I can't roll there with you. Voting with a negative intention, because I understand a positive intention, but I don't disparage you. I think isolated on itself, without bringing in the trajectory of the United States and our Constitution, where our Constitution leads us, isolated unto the self, I think that is a good intention. Stop communism, right? And but to Frank Pavone's point, that voting, is what you're doing is you're mitigating evil. You're not voting for evil, you're mitigating evil. I find that just to be a word game. That's like me saying that, well, when I'm eating a donut, I'm not really eating a donut. What I'm doing is I'm eating sugar. Right? You see how these word games work? How you just kind of twist things to ignore the issue itself. Or like say, oh, I'm not really driving a car. What I'm doing is really just rotating wheels. Oh, well, I'm not really, when I got married, I wasn't really marrying a woman. I was marrying a person who's going to cook and make babies, right? We can play these games all day. We can go there. But we have to admit to the fact that we're just twisting words, and we have to address the question itself. What am I doing here? What is the moral act? The moral act is voting. And then we have to talk about intention. We have to speak about these things as if the church speaks about them. We can't just play these low intellect, these low functioning mental word games to try to coerce and to dupe people into participating in the cult of voting as if voting is a sacrament, right? Which is not. I think there's a path to sainthood that doesn't involve voting at all. I think there's a path to sainthood that recognizes that we do have a king. His name is Jesus Christ. We didn't have to vote on that. We do have moral laws that if we just accept the fact that Christ is our king and we follow the law, we are obedient to Christ and the Holy Spirit, then the world just becomes a better place and there's less sin. If there's less sin, the world's just automatically a better place, right? I think there is a world that recognizes that that we're really just like the Jews who wanted a king. Get king. God, can you give us a king? We won't be like our neighbor. And all along, God just wanted to be our king. And I think we just always fail to recognize that. And as long as we fail to recognize that we do have a king, and his name is Jesus Christ, he's not only a king, he's a king of kings. And if we're just obedient to him, that we'll be fine. To have these mayors of the kingdom, right? Have they have these little sub people just running around doing things that are contrary to how the king would have them behave? It's just kind of silly, right? These middle managers that are just incompetent. It's just kind of silly to me. I don't know, but I understand that people do the best with what they have. Like, oh, David, this is just what we have. We just have to work with what we have. Oh, okay. I just want to know how far that's going to get you. Until we recognize that we do have a king, let's just be obedient to our king. All right? And if we do have middle managers, let's just elect middle managers that are just obedient to the king. Right? And I'm just all for theocracy, not for democracy or monarchy or anything like that. I'm just all for theocracy. I think that will work well. But that's my thoughts on that. And I'll pause there for now until Frank Pavone comes on this show. Maybe we could flesh this out a little more and I could push him a little bit more and maybe have him admit that this is just a word game and we should talk about the moral issue itself. All right. But that's my thoughts on that. Before I get to the next topic, Candace Owens, let me get your comments on this topic and then we'll roll into that. Let me start at the top. Laura Anderson, she hits a spot on. She said the lesser of two evils equals evil. I think that's exactly how the math works out. People say, oh, you should vote for the lesser of two evils. Wait, you're saying I should vote for evil? What are you saying? what's this math you're talking about? Laura nails it. Lane says Roe versus Wade should not be a federal case. I was saying, yeah, demonic. Deanna Week says, rooting for you, David. I got my husband watching you tonight. Really? Is your husband watching? Or what's the word game for that? We're playing word games. That's awesome. Awesome. Thanks, Deanna Week. Deanna, she's been a supporter of the show. She's been a hound of heaven on here for a long time. Like I remember ever since I've been like podcasting or live streaming or making videos, I always remember seeing Diana's name. So I love that lady. Love your husband as well. Thanks for tuning in. Bruce City says that's a good point that abortion should be viewed as a moral issue and not merely a legal issue. Then again, secular society can dismiss the moral issue. So maybe not. Yeah, secularism is a big issue. So my friend Dominic says, I do vote, but if I do not like anybody running for office, I leave the position blank. There have been elections I have left the entire ballot blank. Info voters do not know. Yeah. I guess I should comment on issues, not people. Like, is it moral to vote for issues? Right, so you can go to the ballot. You don't like anybody like Dominic, but say there's an issue on a ballot. The church teaching doesn't change in a ballot booth. And in a ballot booth, like when we get to judgment day, when we have our final report card, everything that we did in the ballot booth is also on a report card. Right? The ballot booth is not, it's not like a sanctuary city. Anything goes. Like we're immune to ballot initiative, you know, what we do in a ballot booth. Like God doesn't like look at that. Obviously he does. Everything that we do, everything that we fail to do is on our final report card. Now, issues. But what about issues, David? So on a ballot initiative, you have maybe, for example, these these ballot initiatives, right? Like, can I vote for these? Can I vote against these? Again, the church would say, well, the moral act is voting. It's neutral. But what's your intention? Your intention is what makes it good or evil. So what's your intention for voting against, for or against these ballot initiatives? So I would say a good intention for voting for abortion ballot initiatives is to say that you're promoting, my intention is promote this sacredness and the dignity of human life. If that's your intention, I think that's a good intention, right? And we can perhaps isolate that. But also we have to ignore the fact that all of these, for example, if you live in a state that's, you know, can you vote for ballot initiatives that's not actually going to stop abortion? It's just going to say, hey, we can sacrifice babies until they're 6 weeks old. Like, what are you voting for? You're not voting to, you're not voting for your intention to preserve the sacredness and dignity of human life is not really met there. Because abortion, you're still voting for abortion. You're just saying that the initiative is just saying this is going to be legal after 6 weeks. Now, if there's an initiative to say no abortion, no exceptions, then okay. I think there your intention matches the moral act itself. And this goes back to what the church teaches about the common good. All right. This is in paragraph 1906. It's about a common good is to be understood the sum total of social conditions which allow people, either as groups or as individuals, to reach their fulfillment more fully and more easily. So that's the definition of the common good. The sum total of social conditions which allow people, either as groups or individuals, to reach their fulfillment more fully and more easily. This is an important sentence right here. It says that the common good concerns the life of all. So you cannot say, well, I'm going to the ballot booth to promote the common good by voting to allow abortion up to 6 weeks. Why? Because that's not good for all. That's only good for people older than 6 weeks. It calls for prudence from each, and even more so those who exercise office of authority. It consists of three essential elements. And here is an important teaching when it comes to voting. Paragraph 12:2240, the church teaches submission to authority and co-responsibility for the common good. Again, for all people, a good that allows us all to more easily have more access to fulfilling our destiny or reaching our final destination. Make it morally obligatory to pay taxes, to exercise the right to vote, and to defend one's country. Now, of course, the Catechism and the Catholic Church would like to assume that you read this thing in sequence, that you started at paragraph 1 and now you're at paragraph 2240, because the church assumes that because, well, you read the whole section on Catholic moral theology, which taught you that you can in no way cooperate with evil. So cooperating with evil is immoral. So when the church teaches it here, it is morally obligatory. The church, the prerequisite here is that the action itself is not evil. Otherwise, it's not moral. So we're obligated to do the good, not the evil. So for example, if your local government is saying that your tax dollars are going to be directly used to pay for child sacrifice, then you're not morally obligated to cooperate with evil in that way. It's the same with the right to defend one's country, if that's good. So if your country has told you, hey, I'm going to go send you to go drop this nuclear bomb on two churches in Japan, that's going to kill a lot of people. Oh, you have to say, well, what those people have to do with what's going on right now? And why does it have to be two Catholic churches that I'm going to drop this bomb on? And why do all these innocent people have to die? Right. So you have to, well, is that, is that, is that good or is that evil? Just the moral act of dropping that bomb in defending one's country. Is that really defending my country or am I going to kill people? That's, we have to ask these questions. And it's the same with the exercise of the right to vote, if that's good. Now, I recognize that it's probably hard, probably difficult today to really find people who have good intentions. Perhaps there's some that's running. I don't know. But I understand that that's very difficult in today's secular society. But the church's teaching doesn't change. That we're obligated to do the good, even as citizens. So, and then that applies to, again, to these positions on the ballot if they're just ballot initiatives. Hey, I'm going to go to vote for a not for a person. I'm going to ignore every person on the ballot, but there's some initiatives here that I want to vote for. I think that could be good. Maybe there's some things for the school board, raising your property taxes to pay for a new pool at the school or something like that. Maybe that is good, right? Raising your taxes to give more illegal immigrants free housing and debit cards and giving them $125 to buy a home. Maybe there's a ballot initiative for that, right? Maybe you could find the good in that, of people breaking the law and stuff like that. I don't know. You just have to, as an individual, you just have to determine what is my intention, right? Before I do this moral act. And I think that just applies to anything. So, and that's just how church teaching works out on that. All right. Oh, man. Some of these comments are funny. All right. Let's get into the whole Candace Owens thing. We're already at the halfway mark of the show. Let's get into it now. This is David O. Gray's show, Off Code Unscripted on St. Dominic's Media. So, man, Candace Owens has been taking a lot of heat lately. Like, she left the Daily Wire. She became Catholic. I think had a new baby. And just a lot of changes in her life. Now she has this whole 2024 just kind of different to her 2023. And now she's taking a lot of heat from everyone. From Jews, from Catholics, to evangelicals. Everyone. Probably except for Muslims. Everyone's against her, probably except for Muslims. And because of positions she's taken on, basically she's gone full E. Michael Jones. You guys know I love E. Michael Jones. He's been on the show like two or three times, right? But I do recognize the fact that he, when it comes to evil in a world, he tends to go straight to the Jews. And he wants to point out the things that the Jews did to enhance or to propagate that evil, even when it comes to pornography. You know, we don't, with E. Michael Jones, we cannot talk about just the moral issue itself and how it's related to sin without first getting to how the Jews are the ones who promoted that whole thing. Right? You know, if water's dirty in a river. Like before we get to the moral act itself, that we're responsible as human beings for this earth and to making it having it be a place that is able to foster life and to promote life, not death. We can't get to that point of dirty water until we talk about the Jews and everything they've done to pollute the water. Right. That's E. Michael Jones. I love him though. But and Candace seems to be on that same path. And it's getting to the point where countries are now starting to give her like the Elon Musk treatment. Even in Australia, she's supposed to go there for some sort of speaking tour. And they're talking about banning her from the country because of where she's at. And even Catholics, you know, she converted to the Catholic Church, I think this year. And even I see a lot of Catholics on X.com just going in on her and saying that she's not even Catholic because of these positions that she's holding, right? So here's a video that kind of summarizes some of, you know, her trajectory. This is not a full, I think, panoplia of everything that she's been saying and writing about this particular issue, but it's an interesting summary that shows where people think that Candace has completely lost her mind and went off the reservation and are just kind of worried about her. So here it is.
The fact that pedophiles are in power. Yes. They are literally in power. And that is intentional because then they can be controlled while they are in power. And they are also exhibiting signs of a psychopathology that lets them know that they will do harm to the masses and feel nothing because they were themselves, many of them, raped when they were children. Yep. It's not a coincidence that Justin Trudeau is gay. Obama, gay. Mm-hmm. Zelensky, gay. Emmanuel Macron, gay and married to a trans man who molested him when he was a child.
Dear, oh dear, and it gets even worse. Owens has made a range of comments that are anti-Semitic, bizarre and inflammatory comments about Jews and Israel.
Catholics and Christians were going missing on Passover, and then they would find bodies, okay, across Europe, and they were able to trace them back to Jews. Blood libel! There weren't Jews, okay? These were Frankists. Unless the nation of Israel may have been established by some Frankists.
Oh boy. Hence the calls by Jewish groups to ban her from coming to Australia.
So that's even Sky News out of Australia, who's saying Candace Owens is going tropo, which means, you know, she's gone delirious. And Sky News is kind of like mainstream conservative. They're not even wacky conservative or anything like that. They're just kind of right. But here's the thing. I think, you know, what's happening to Candace is the same thing that happened to Kanye West when he started talking about topics like this. I think people get really emotional. I think there's a marvelous campaign, a lot of money floating around by groups and groups that call themselves anti-Semitic, whatever that means. That it's kind of like the same way that Kamala Owens' campaign had been busted of paying people $10,000, social media influencers, $10,000 a pop to talk about Project 2025 to scare black women, black American women. And they're really successful paying people $10,000 a pop, social media influencers, to talk about how bad Project 2025 is, how Trump is a part of Project 2025. And now, like I said, every black woman in the United States can tell you how bad Project 2025 is, right? I think the groups that call themselves anti-Semitic or Jew protectionist groups, they've been doing the same thing, obviously, for decades. And they've been very successful with their lobbies. I think it's called NADAL or something like that. They have a representative attached. Every representative and senator in the House has a lobbyist, you want to call them, attached to them to advocate for Jew interest and protect Jew defamation or things that they think may harm them, because they do have an interest. They would say that they never want to repeat what happened in World War II. So they want to protect themselves so that never happens to them again, like never again. So from their perspective, that does take a lot of money. It takes a lot of blackmail. It takes a lot of negotiation. So that group of people does do a wonderful job. Now, is there a lot of, in the world, I think, is there a lot of prejudice towards Jews? I would say yes. But also, I think a lot of it is comes from the fact that I think there's a lot of just historical ignorance about, like, why are they in certain industries? Why do they feel like they have to protect themselves? Like, we could talk about how Jews is always around, they're always around baking, they're always around money, without ignoring the fact that it was right here in Germany. In fact, pretty much major cities like right around me, places like in Trier, where the reason why Jews were putting ghettos there early as 1100s. And the reason why they were in banking or in retail running stores is because, well, that's the only jobs they could have. Because Catholics, we thought those jobs were dirty. That we didn't want to work in banks because banks charged interest, and that was a sin back then. So they made Jews do that job. They made Jews work in banks. So if Jews are still working in banking, well, it's because of their history in Europe. That's just what their trade was. And that was passed down from generation to generation, right? And it's the same with retail and things like this. So I think there's a lot of historical ignorance. And we can say, well, Jews just always around money. Okay. All right. We can say that about a lot of people. We can say about that people who came from Japan and China who are working in retail stores. Or Arabs who come to the United States and they work at Quickie Marks, you know, 7-Eleven type of stores, little bodegas, right? We can make jokes about this and demean people about that, but there's some historical realities that we have to also take into consideration. Like, why do people do the things that they do? But also, are there nefarious things? I mean, can Candace Owens go completely E. Michael Jones and blame and create this category called the Jews that are basically just your Ashkenazi Jews that they're not really Jewish religious Jews. They're just more secular Jews, and talk about that as a group that has that are always into these machinations and doing bad things around the world. Perhaps I think you can. You can talk about that in a way, perhaps. As Catholics, we would probably use the term, corporate demonic infestation. When the demonic overtakes entire groups, that's kind of how we would talk about it. If we would isolate a group and say this group does demonic things, but then we would talk about, well, how to work the evil one. He does manipulate entire groups to do evil, right? That'd be a better way to talk about it. But also, when it comes to people like E. Michael Jones and Candace Owens, Kanye West, when they go on these things, we also cannot just immediately dismiss them. I think we do have to ask the question, like, is that true? We should investigate, like, what they're saying, like what Candace Owens said. Is that true or not true? Has history hidden things? Has history been rewritten? Has history not been told? Has the full story really not been exhausted? Can we talk about these things, and can we determine whether they're true or not true? I think that should be the path. And just leave it at that. I tend to find over the course of her public life, and I made, I think maybe up to now, maybe 3 or 4 videos about Candace Owens, most of them, you know, negative and positive. But one thing I will say is that she tends to be more right than wrong. Tends to be. My problem with her before she was a Catholic, when she started the whole Blacksit thing, Blacks leaving the Republican Party, I said that, man, everything that Candace does, you know, Candace Owens does is going to fail because she's not grounded in the truth, which is Christ and his church. So she's always going to be on this shaky sand, you know, because she's not grounded. She seemed to be kind of like flaky, jumping from one thing to another, always changing her position, whether it's abortion, whether it's gay marriage. She just seemed to be, right? But now I think she's landed in a good place. She's Catholic. And so now I think she has, I think, the solid footing. I think she's on more stable ground now than she ever was in her life. And so I think she has a propensity. If she look at things through a Catholic lens and speaks as the church speaks and thinks as the church thinks and uses that framework of good and evil, sin, virtue. I think she has, I think, a stronger ability now to really land in places that are more right than wrong. But just historically, I think she has been more right than wrong. And I think we should give her the benefit of the doubt, rather than becoming sensitive and rather buying into the manipulation from groups who just want to protect Jew interest. Right? Because I think groups who want to protect Jew interest are not interested in the truth. Any group who wants to protect the interests of a group are not interested in the truth. They're just interested in their agenda and them being protected at no matter the cost. And so that's my thoughts on her, where she's at right now in this campaign against her. We have to recognize that this is just a campaign to protect a certain group of people, and they're going to protect that group of people at all costs. And it first started with Candace Owens being fired from Daily Wire. And I really don't know where it's going to end. Right? She may become demonetized on YouTube. She may not be allowed to go to Australia. It may get worse. She may be debanked. Banks may not want to deal with her anymore. Right? So this path that she's on, she may not care. Her husband, Jordan Farmer, he may not care. They may think that she thinks she's some sort of Joan of Arc, and that she's just out to win the day and fight this battle no matter the cost. All right? Okay. I think that's one way to live your life. But I think until that path is matched with virtue, until that path is actually matched with, hey, my intention is to become a saint, my intention is to become holy, until those two things are matched, her crusade for the truth really doesn't really end in anything good. Right? Because it's intention, right? What's your intention? Candace should really judge her intention here. What's my intention for speaking all these truth bombs? Is my intention to promote the good of Christ and his church? Is my intention truly holy? If it is, then fine. Go for it. Become debanked and all that stuff. Whatever the consequences are, don't care about them, because the consequences don't matter if your intentions are good, because your actions and the consequences of that, it all belongs to God. If you're doing the will of God, then the outcome, everything belongs to him. Fine. You'll have a good report card on Judgment Day. But if that's not true, if the intentions and everything is all about me and what I want to do, and my crusade, it's my fight, then the consequences belong to you. Right? So I'm not here for judgment. I really don't know her intentions. I don't know her heart. I don't know what private revelations she received from God. Right? I don't know. Right? I'm just speaking kind of organically, off code, unscripted about, you know, what I see. And I kind of feel bad that people are going after her because a certain group of people just want to protect themselves, right? But that's the world we live in, and those are consequences we deal with. This is David O'Gray Show, Off Code and Unscripted. Let me get to your comments about the show, and then we're out of here. Appreciate you guys coming in today, or tonight, wherever you are. Let me get your thoughts about Candace Owens. Bruce City, my friend, says, good way of describing E. Michael Jones. Before getting to the dirty water, E. Michael Jones has to interject the Jews. Yep. Everything is prefaced. Everything is couched in that trajectory. Bruce says, Candace's words are charitable, juxtaposed with what Israel's RPS of males and females, starving children, having kids amputated without anesthesia, their victims being Palestinians. Yeah, she's been speaking truth bombs about both sides. Like, she hasn't called the Palestinians saints or the Jews saints. She's everything that she said seems to represent some facts, and some facts that are not being expressed by mainstream media about what the Israeli government is doing to a group of people who they consider enemies, because they've been, you know, Hamas has been intermingling with them. And so what do you do? You know, if you have Hamas as your neighbor and they've sworn to destroy you, and they're intermingling with all the Palestinians, you can't really distinguish one from another. The normies are protecting the bad guys. Right? Their perspective is like, take out everybody. I mean, that's one way to fight a war. And so Candace Owens has been, you know, speaking the truth about that. So, I mean, what do you do? Bellator says there is a lot of puzzle pieces to the history or the last 100 years, and everyone plays a part in some way. Even the bad guys fill in the caps here and there. Doesn't mean we like it. That's true. Laura Anderson says, I believe her. Bruce Lady says, not true. She said, I listened to a rabbi on YouTube talk about how the Talmud tells Jews they are not to charge usury to Jews, but always. I mean, your point is like, not whether. I mean, I don't think I say anything not true. I just said in Europe, Jews were given banking jobs because Catholics did not want to do those jobs, because we, as Catholics, we used to believe that we couldn't charge interest. So we wouldn't do those jobs. So we get those jobs to Jews. Now, what if Jews are charging Jews interest at the banks? I don't know. Like, that wasn't my point. My point was just that they were given that job because they were dirty jobs from our perspective. And that's why historically Jews have stayed in the banking industry. Just like, let me say, German people would have stayed in the piano making industry. Or Chinese people from certain districts stayed in the garments industry. You know, culturally, these things were passed down from one generation to the next. So today, when we talk about, oh, Jews are just always in banking, we always have to remember that historic aspect is that those are the jobs they were given. I don't know anything about if they were charging Jews interest or not. I don't know. Bruce says, I also disagree with Candace Owens on Michael Jackson, the king of pop, was little boy having loving pedio, boy loving pedophile. I'm persuaded by the pattern of his plus behavior during interrogation. Right. Yeah, I don't know anything about her thoughts on Michael Jackson fondling and molesting boys. I don't know. Legorzine says Catholics cannot be Zionist. Interesting. I'd like to hear more about that. Colin says, Candace said Christ is king. That's good enough for me. I wish she would say Christ is king of kings. I think that's how we should address Christ. He's not just a king. He's a king of kings, right? Colin says, I pray, David, she is true to her values. I think she is straight. Good woman. Yeah, I generally like Candace. I think she's good for the social space. Right. We don't have to agree with people 100% to recognize, hey, they add value, good value. So I generally like her. Miriam says, free Palestine. Colin says, Candace has a great conservative voice. Ben Shapiro needs to return to the truth of Christ. Yeah, Ben Shapiro, we need to pray for his conversion. He does. It's amazing how many Catholics he speaks with, whether it's Barron, whether it's Fred, whether it's other people at Daily Wire. like the guy who talks like this and the other guy that wears plaid. Like he has Catholics in his life or in his sphere, yet he's still not concerned about the truth. That's demonic. You cannot have that many Catholics in your sphere who are, you know, somewhat knowledgeable about Christ and his church, right? And none of those guys are like theologians or anything like that, but I think they all tend to be generally knowledgeable. And I guess they're sacramental Catholics. You can't have that many in your sphere and just be that dark and that anti-Christian. So he may need a whole exorcism. Ben Shapiro, he's worried about that guy. Yeah, Bellator, there you go. You know that Christ is King of Kings and Lord of Lords, King of the universe. Every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, and glory to the God the Father. Yeah. Yes. That's it. Appreciate you guys coming in. David O. Gray Show, Off Code, Unscripted on St. Dominic's Media. I'll catch you in the next one. On Thursday of this week, I got a live stream, kind of like interview, but more like a conversation. So that's going to be interesting. And on Monday, I think there'll be another live show. And then the following Thursday, I'll have another interview with Ellen Steve's Home LeBlanc. She'll be on talking about a new apostolate she has. And also next week is the 10th. When is the 10th? I think 10th is next Tuesday or Wednesday or something like that. Father Hell No, season 2 begins. So check out that Father Hell No season 2. That'll be on, I think, next Wednesday. I think every 2 weeks after that. So Wednesday and then the 24th and then October, whatever it is in October. So every 2 weeks, Father Hell No will be back for season 2, 8 episodes. So looking forward to that. Link for your comments on season 2. But until then, until next time, blessings and shalom to you and to yours. Remember that Jesus loves you and is there for you. So live your life like salvation matters. God bless, my friends.